Blog Talk Radio.
Berksham, this is Mark Lichtenwalter coming to you live on this 20th day of January 2020. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. The text for this reading tonight will be taken from Chapter 4 of Who Crucified Christ by Ogden Kraut. The title to this chapter is Response to the Easter Messages. I will post the text to this reading as well as the radio show audio on my different Facebook groups, Zion's Redemption Bookstore page on Facebook, Church of the Living Messiah page on Facebook, as well as LDS Gospel Mysteries and LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussions. Let's get right into the reading. We are on page 20 of Who Crucified Christ, and you can read that for free, the whole book, at OgdenKraut.com. That's OgdenKraut.com. Once you get on that main page, click on Read Ogden's Books and then scroll all the way down to the very bottom. And it's all in alphabetical order. Anyway, we're on page 20, chapter 4 of Who Crucified Christ. Response to the Easter Messages. It is tragic indeed that the birth pangs of Christianity were occasioned by an event in which Jews were directly implicated. End quote. L.S. Rivkin, What Crucified Christ, page 3. As previously mentioned, in 1964, the Roman Pope decreed that all of us are guilty of the death of Christ. This was one of the first times in nearly two millennia that guilt was shifted from the Jews to someone or something else. Even then, more recently, the Jewish scholar Ellis Rivkin tells us that the issue is not who but what killed Jesus, and he put the blame on the imperialist system of Rome. But systems do not function independently all by themselves. People direct them. All governments, like machinery, are designed, built, and operated by human beings, including the Roman or Jewish system of government. Naturally, Rivkin, a Jew himself, would tend to steer around the issue that for nearly two millennia, Jews have been to blame for the death of Jesus. We cannot blame him because it is natural for one to defend his own religion, race, or politics. And certainly, it is not correct to say that all Jews were guilty of the deed. Among the first Christians were Jews, and they held great responsibilities until the time of Christ, as indicated in the great patriarchal blessing pronounced upon them by their forefather, Yaakov, or Jacob, page 21. So in our search for accuracy, we need to go back to some semblance of historical record that contains events happening about the time of Jesus. Rivkin went to the general historian, Josephus, for most of his information. However, Josephus gave us only one reference to Christ in all of his historical works. And we're going to quote that now. This is Antiquities of the Jews, Book 18, Chapter 3, paragraph 3, quote, "Now there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. He was the Christ, or the Messiah. When Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men among us, had condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him. for he appeared to them alive again the third day. As the divine prophet had foreseen these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him and the tribe of the Christians, so named from him, are not extinct at this day. End quote. Antiquities of the Jews, Book 18, Chapter 3, Paragraph 3. Unfortunately, we grasp a much better understanding of events from the scriptures written by disciples who were there than we can from Josephus, who was not there. So Josephus was born right after Yeshua or Jesus died. So everything he had was secondhand. But he lived so close to the time. So there's some other controversy about whether Jesus actually is in the Antiquities of the Jews. It could be that it was added later by Christians trying to get Jesus into his information or into his writings. But either way, that is what is spoken of. I think there's actually two or three places that talks about Jesus, perhaps talks about Jesus. I've read other ones as well, and I've got the book of Josephus, the translation of it, and it is in my book, but like I said, it could have been added at a later date. All right, so Josephus, who was not there, even though three of the four Gospels were written years after the fact, all but John's, it is interesting to note concerning the death of Christ that Josephus had only one reference to him, and on the other hand, the Apostle John had only one reference to the Romans. So, and another interesting thing, like the letters that Paul wrote actually predate the writing of the Gospels, as far as scholars can figure out. It's an interesting study. I love it. I've taken several classes in college about these things, and it's just, I can't get enough. I love it. But I like to hear what other people have to say. Like, I wish I could attend more lectures. I like what other people have to say. I don't like to always be the one to be putting things forward, but luckily I have, Ogden Kraut, who compiled all of these, quotes from different books and different people, both in Christendom and Jews and early leaders of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I guess that's all I'm going to get for now, but I love hearing people teach about these type of things. I wish more people did it, especially going back to the fundamental foundation of the Restoration. Anyway, continuing on. However, we are indebted to Flavius Josephus, who lived from 37 to 95 AD, for shedding much light on the history of the Jews and the Romans at this time. He was a military leader defending the Jews in the province of Galilee and became a prisoner of the Romans, at which time he witnessed the destruction of Jerusalem by the Roman army. Subsequently, he lived in Rome, where he wrote the history of the Jewish war in the Antiquity of the Jews, or on page 22 of Who Crucified Christ. Revkin wrote that Jesus so frightened Rome that he had to die. The fact that Rome had built an empire so strong that it controlled nearly all the world for almost 1,000 years, they had the largest and best equipped and best trained army. They were not afraid of any single man nor his religion. In fact, they did not consider any religion to be a threat to their glorious empire. They had a host of gods of their own, and even set up an altar for the unknown God, as they didn't want to offend any god by overlooking him, and we know that because of the letters of Paul. The man Jesus who rode into Jerusalem on a donkey with his followers following, throwing flowers before him, does not depict the type of enemy that would frighten the Roman army. Page 23. Jesus never committed any crime against the Romans, and they even admitted that. Once he paid a tax that he didn't rightfully owe, but Peter had said that he would do so, so it was paid. See Matthew chapter 17, verse 24 through 27. On another occasion, he said to render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's. Matthew chapter 22, verse 21. He thus avoided a rebellion. In his responding Easter article, Bishop Niederauer said that Rifkin does a service to Christians and non-Christians alike when he shifts the question of who to what crucified Christ. We would like to know why. Was it the Nazi government at fault for World War II, or the Nazi leaders that ran the government? Should a police officer write out a ticket to an automobile for speeding and recklessness instead of the driver? We can't blame a car for what a driver does with it, nor can we blame the governments for what people do with them. Governments can be good or bad, depending on who runs them. It is the people, not the government, that determine how the political system will function. As Brigham Young once explained, quote, "The government of heaven, if wickedly administered, would become one of the worst governments upon the face of the earth, no matter how good the government is, unless it is administered by righteous men. An evil government will be made of it. Unless it is administered by righteous men, an evil government will be made out of it." It's because of priestcraft. Journal of Discourses, Volume 10, page 177. "Conversely, a bad government can be turned into a good one if good people take over. The good bishop, Niederauer," I really wish I heard somebody say his name because I don't know how to say this guy's name. Niederauer, whatever. Correctly stated that moral evil exists in social structures and individual behaviors alike. And again, what crucified Jesus Christ was human sinfulness. Therefore, more correctly, the question about the responsibility of Christ's crucifixion should be centered on who did it, not what. Page 24 of Who Crucified Christ by Ogden Kraut. Bishop Niederauer properly stated that the facts of the issue can be spoken of without anti-Semitism. We are looking at an event that occurred in history, and we do not need to change history to avoid anti-Semitism. Facts are sometimes difficult to bear, but they remain facts whether we like them or not. We shouldn't change history because of the outcome of something that happened many years before. This whole thing with anti-Semitism, okay, it wasn't all the Jewish people. It was the high priests and a majority of the council of high priests, these Sadducees and Pharisees that brought Jesus to have him tried before the Romans. It's not all these other people's fault. And just because you condemn or you even state facts doesn't mean you're an anti-Semite. If somebody of one race does something, or even a group of people within that race does a thing, that doesn't condemn the whole race. People that flip out because there are wicked Jews, there are righteous Jews as well. Rabbi Yitzhak Kadori was one of them. There have been many righteous Jews before Jesus and after Jesus, in our day and age as well. We shouldn't condemn a whole race of people because of what somebody in their government or somebody who is also Jewish does. That's just ridiculous. People should be judged based on their own merits, not by the merits of the people that, you know, I'm German. German, Scottish, Jewish, English, and Native American, Iroquois. So, am I to be mad at the Germans because I'm also a Jew? Should I be mad at the English because I'm a Scot or, you know, I have Iroquois blood in me? That's ridiculous. You know, I'm going to be mad at Hitler and the people who followed Hitler for what happened to the Jews. I'm going to be mad at, what's his name? I can't remember what his name is. At the Little Bighorn. Colonel, whatever his face is. I mean, individuals do individual things. Even if there's a group of people, I'm going to be mad at the Ku Klux Klan for lynching blacks in the South. But I'm not going to throw everybody under the bus because somebody did a thing. We shouldn't throw Jews under the bus because somebody within their tribe did a thing. That's ridiculous. People that do things like that, in my estimation, are small-minded people. Let's see here. We study the facts of history either to avoid or to repeat the results of some prior event. If some friends were driving their car across the country and were robbed by a gang of German hoodlums, we shouldn't record the event by saying that they came by train and had an uneventful trip just to avoid the anti-Germanism. And, like, yeah, okay, a gang of German jerks robs somebody, whatever. Well, that's not everybody who's German's fault. Accountability lies with the individuals who do a thing, not the whole society, race, or people who, you know, do a thing. So, anyway, continuing. The most amazingly inaccurate statement of Rivkin's book was that the gospel confirms that no institution of Judaism had anything to do with the trial and crucifixion of Jesus. It seems inconceivable how a scholar could completely overlook all of those implications recorded by the Apostle John. How could he overlook the whole book? Bishop Niederauer couldn't agree with his statement either. Pastor Harbauer, why? Why are these names so difficult? Harbauer, I guess, I don't know, stated, quote, "Our history suggests that the Jews and the Christians know enough about such painful history to join together on behalf of the oppressed and needy rather than stand apart. Perhaps our Lord is working through scholars like Rivkin and others to provide the groundwork for such reconciliation." Salt Lake Tribune, April 11, 1998. That's a beautiful concept, but too often we endeavor to change history to make these compromises. In the case of scholars like Rivkin, who have changed the question from who to what, it is not too different from changing history itself. We don't need to rewrite history or avoid it to patch up differences. A false history is worse than no history. Page 25 of Who Crucified Christ. As we previously stated, we cannot blame a Jewish historian for attempting to reverse the popular belief that the Jews were to blame for the crucifixion of Christ. But now we have the Catholic and Protestant clergy also beginning to change their previous opinions and views about the crucifixion. Indeed, they are guilty of trying to change history as well. Were the Roman soldiers the real killers of Christ, or were they just carrying out orders? Page 26. We are familiar with the compassionate statement of Jesus at his crucifixion. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Luke chapter 23, verse 34, which is found in the King James translation of the Bible. However, in the inspired translation by Joseph Smith, a small insert clarifies what he meant. Quote, then said Jesus, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, meaning the soldiers who crucified him. And they parted his raiment and cast lots. Luke chapter 23, verse 35. In other words, the Roman soldiers did not know nor recognize Jesus as the Messiah and Redeemer of the world. They were just doing their job, as any executioner was expected to do. However, the Jewish leaders knew who he was, and they could not be forgiven for what they did, the shedding of innocent blood. So when I come back on the next program, I'll be on chapter 5, and we're going to talk about Pilate's report, and then I'll be starting on page 27. Excuse me. And let's see, we'll be going to page... usually Ogden starts off with smaller chapters, and then as we get into it, he gets more long-winded as he's building his argument or whatever. So I'm still looking to see. So this chapter 5 is page 27. Well, it's a pretty long chapter. All right, 27 to 42, and then the one after that will be Caiaphas' report to the Sanhedrin. So, anyway, let me see if we have any callers on the program at this time. No, we do not. If anybody wants to call in, it's 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827, and I'll... give a little update on what's going on in my life. So I am done driving truck for tonight. That's why I did the radio program when I did. I'm actually sitting in my semi-truck right now. And I'm going to try to start around 4 p.m. tomorrow and see, hopefully I can get a couple loads in it. I hate it because my company has one truck and one driver. And I want to work full time because I need money for the things that I need to do, of course, you know, for living and the different projects that I have, to pay for this radio show. Even I'm going to be paying for a year, a whole year at once coming up here and just, a couple of days, which it's expensive to run this, and I don't get a lot of help, hardly any help, actually, from anyone to do these, but that's fine. It's just, it's hard to do for one, and it's hard to finance for another, but it is what it is. But, I can't work as much as I wish I could, because I have a 7-month-old baby boy and a little girl who just turned 5, and I've got to be able to be awake and watch them. And luckily, they both sleep in till sometime between 8 in the morning and 10 in the morning. Sometimes they wake up way earlier than that, but I've got to be able to be awake when they're awake. And so right now, it's a little after midnight on the 21st. I started the show on the 20th. But I've still got to finish up doing what I'm doing, and I won't even be in bed till 2. And then I'm going to sleep from hopefully about 2 to 8, 9, or 10 in the morning, and then try to function, you know. And hopefully I get that much sleep. Sometimes I don't. So, and I can't go anywhere until my kids get home around 4, and then my wife gets home shortly after that. So I'm trying to do the best that I can with everything. But another thing that happened recently is my grandmother, who was born in March of 1923, passed away on the 13th, which oddly enough was my daughter's 5th birthday. Luckily, she didn't pass away until around, it was 10:20 p.m. when she finally passed. So it didn't cast a shadow on my daughter's birthday, but the next day I had to tell him, you know. And so we buried her on the 18th. Of January, which was on Saturday, which oddly enough was my little brother's 36th birthday. This funeral is better than any other funeral that I'd ever been to. She was almost 97 years old. She lived a long, wonderful life. She married my grandpa when she was a young woman. She was a Marine, or he was a Marine, but she was in, I can't remember exactly what you call it, but it's a Navy Waves, I think. Yeah, that's it. The Navy Waves, which is a nursing program. So, like, we have a flag for her coffin and everything, and it was really nice. She met my grandfather because he was a double leg amputee of World War II. He saved his platoon from a turkey shoot between 2 or 3 pillboxes or machine gun nests up on the hill. I think it was 2. Anyway, but she had a wonderful life. She had 3 daughters. She felt like she was supposed to have 5 children. Unfortunately, my grandfather decided to go behind her back and get a vasectomy. But she was able to raise 5 children. My aunt, her oldest son, and my mom, her oldest son, were raised by them every summer and a couple of winters. And Grandma always felt like we were supposed to be hers. And I feel that too. And one of her greatest regrets was that I was not a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints anymore. She wanted, since she raised me, for me to be sealed to her as her child. That would have been changed on church records. I was not born under the covenant. My mom was kind of rebellious when she was younger and when she was older, and she still is a little bit. But it's kind of funny. My wife got caught in the middle of my grandmother and my mother arguing about who raised me. My mom doesn't, I don't know if she wants to admit how much I was gone or you know, but Grandma was like, you know, he was here every single summer since he was 2 years old. We took him off your hands because of all the turmoil in your life. And he was with us several winters as well. You know, and they're the ones that paid for my mission. In fact, they actually served 7 missions themselves. And then when they weren't doing missionary work as missionaries, then they were doing church work and being branch presidents and Elders Quorum presidents and Relief Society people, teachers, and gospel doctrine teachers, you know. But they were a great influence in my life. And my grandmother, being 97, all of her friends had passed away, except for her younger sister, who is 94, I think. She's still alive, and she's in relative good health. But all of her other friends are gone. And I was so happy for her to finally be able to pass beyond the veil. Because my grandfather had passed in 2005. And she missed him so much. And my grandma wanted to go be with him. And we kind of joked, because my grandma was a little bit hard to get along with. We kind of joked that grandpa was like, would tell Peter at the pearly gates not to, you know, to make sure grandma was nice and healthy and that she wasn't going to pass because he needed a break from her. Eh, she was a pain, but we all loved her. But I was so happy for her that she was finally able to pass and go beyond the veil and be with her friends. Like, she missed her friends and her siblings and her family and her husband. And I can just imagine the reunion that she had with her family. And I don't know if they're allowed to play skip bow or, you know, but I remember many nights being the child with the old people who was playing games with them, all kinds of different games. They'd always get together and have game nights, and we'd go fishing, and I was always the tag along, you know. But I wonder and I just smile at the thought that maybe Grandma and Grandpa and Doris and Bill, who were their favorite friends, that they knew all the way back from the time of the war. Got together to play some cards and talk about family and life. With a lot of these other people that have died in my circle, friends and family, over the last couple of years, and there have been many, all of them should have been around for longer, at least as far as I'm concerned. You know, my friend Cameron, he died, he was 42. My friend Frank, the guy who owned this truck, he was 59. My friend Dave Redman was 56. My co-driver, Dwayne, is in his 60s. and I mourn for all of them. But for my grandmother, I mourn, but I also rejoice because she lived a full and long life, and it was time for her to go home. So that's what we did this weekend. After the funeral, we went to a hotel with a pool. So we spent that little bit of extra money so that we could relax, because it was up to Idaho. We had to go up to Idaho for this funeral. And so that we could let the kids play and not be so sad. Because my little daughter, the one that just turned 5, she always wanted to go see great-grandma. And when we were gone for too long, my little daughter would cry and say how much she missed great-grandma. So this was really hard for them, for my kids. But this was the best funeral I had ever been to. So anyway, thanks for listening to my personal reminiscence, or whatever it's called. Wish I was better educated. We don't have any guest callers. I'll just refresh this. Nope. No guest callers. So anyway, I'm going to end this episode, and when we come back on later on, we'll be on Chapter 5, like I said before. So thank you for listening. Take care. This has been a Zion's Redemption Radio Network podcast. You can find this on iTunes at Fundamentally Mormon, and also at blogtalkradio.com/Fundamentally Mormon. Thank you for listening. Take care, everyone. God bless, and goodbye.